Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 294 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again this week, the Godfather, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
I'm wonderful on a Halloween day.
It's a little spooky, huh?
Yeah, I'm going as my favorite Red. I'm going trick-or-treating as my favorite Red.
Brandon Phillips, huh?
That's exactly it. I'm going to have a big ego.
Oh, gosh. He's not even playing for the Reds anymore, and you still have to hammer up.
I'm just being snotty.
I'm
going to break out. I'm going to break out my number 14 jersey and just so Doug Gray goes insane.
Well, that'll do it. That'll do it. Let's talk about the current Reds. The Major League Baseball season just ended with the Washington Nationals winning the championship. And what that says to me is what I say every year. You just got to get in that tournament. You just got to make the playoffs. You got to sneak in somehow, and then you've got as good a chance as anyone else. That's what I'm drawing from the Nationals being a wild card and almost losing the wild card game and still coming back to win the whole tournament, the whole championship. You have any?
Or did they fight? I mean, they fought back and fought back and fought back, and boy, they got some good young players.
And they have some good pitching.
Oh yeah.
That's an interesting team. I want to steal at least one of their players. We'll talk about him later.
It was interesting going into the series that at least I thought that the Washington bullpen would be their undoing.
Yeah, that's just.
And,
well, you have the Astros who were clearly the better team, top to bottom. And you're right. The bullpen had been questionable. I do have UVA guy Sean Doolittle out there in that bullpen. But
an ex Red,
you just don't know.
Tanner Rainey.
They did have a Tanner Rainey, yes. You just don't know in a short series. That's why you've got to just qualify. You don't have to be a 110 win team in the regular season. You just got to get in, and I think that's what the Reds need to be shooting for this off season. I want to preview the upcoming off season just a little bit. We've talked about it quite a bit already, and we're now right on the precipice of some things actually getting ready to happen. And it's what I would call the most important Reds off season in at least three decades. Am I overselling that, Bill?
Three decades.
What's the last winner that the Reds were more kind of under the gun in terms of having to improve the team, having to make some kind of big improvement?
Well, I mean, 91, there was more expected of them.
Yeah, but I guess. I just can't see any time in the last 30 years that I can think of where they really have to do. I think before 1990, they felt like they had to. Because they were coming off the year when Rose was banned and it dropped back to fifth place, and it was just a bad year, and they felt like they had to do something. But since then, I don't know that there's been an off season where the Reds, they should have had more urgency in most of those off seasons, but I don't know there's been one where they really have to do something. That's the way I'm framing it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just wishful thinking here.
I agree with you. And the other thing is about the going into the 90 season too, other than the 89 season, which the Rose stuff just destroyed the team. They'd been on the precipice for three years. They'd finished second without looking it up. I know at least twice. I think it was three times they'd finished second and faded late in the year on West Coast trips, if I remember right. But the other thing about this offseason is I think it's the first time that at least some of us have a feeling that this is the front office is looking at things differently than they have in the past, that maybe we're playing the same game as everybody else is at this point. I mean, only time will tell whether that's really true, but the hiring of the hitting coach and the pitching philosophy throughout the organization and the team moving forward with what seems to be a plan for the hitting philosophy throughout the organization. it gives us hope that there's that we're going to get on the same, you know, game board with everybody else in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we should have done that 5 years ago. I think that's just a fact at this point. There's nothing we can do about it. The Reds have done things in the last 12 months that would encourage you to believe that they know what they're doing. And I think if this type of decision-making, this type of a plan had been in place, these types of individuals had been in place 5 years ago, we're not in this spot right now. But I'm not willing to wait another 5 years for them to completely break things down and rebuild it. They've got to do something on the major league level. And they've indicated a willingness. Dick Williams has publicly said, you know, playoffs next year is our goal. And so they've indicated that they understand that the fan base is just not in a place to be patient much longer. And so we'll see. We'll see how that manifests itself. In terms of big news this week, we try to run through the news at the top of every podcast. There's not a whole lot this week. Our guy Brian Price, former Reds manager, was hired as the Phillies pitching coach. Good for Brian Price, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I mean, I don't think anybody would ever say Brian Price is a bad guy or anything like that. And
Trent Rosecrans might.
Well, he might. Yeah, but he's been a very effective Major League Baseball pitching coach.
Yeah, when he was the Reds pitching coach, he was fantastic. I had no issues with him as pitching coach. He was probably in over his head as manager, although, again, the front office didn't make things easy for him by not giving him good players. But I don't know. Good luck to Brian Price. I don't have any. It's funny that they hired Brian Price while also flirting with Dusty Baker as their manager. So
yeah.
Other news, really, the only other thing that I can tell you is the Reds are getting ready to make a major concert announcement, as Doug Gray reported at RedLegNation.com. A major concert announcement. Now, who do you hope the concert is going to feature, Bill Lack?
Who do I hope?
Yeah, they're going to have what concert's going to be announced at Great American Ballpark sometime in the next year? Who would, if it were up to you, you could bring anyone in, who would it be?
At this point, for me, it'd probably be Springsteen.
All right, we're done. We're out. No. You know the rule on Red Leg Nation Radio is you are not allowed to mention Bruce Springsteen in my presence.
No, I didn't know that. So I will be bringing it up at every opportunity from now on.
You need to read your contract. Okay, that was specifically laid out in black and white.
I guess you're going to have to find me then.
Yeah, I will. Good grief, most overrated artist in the history of the world, Bruce Springsteen. What about the Stones? The Rolling Stones. That'd be a good one.
That wouldn't do anything for me. I'm not taking anything away from the Rolling Stones, but other than Mick Jagger, who is in phenomenal shape for a man that's, what, 74 or whatever, can the rest of them even stand upright any longer?
They're touring when they can still, going strong. Not as strong as they were, obviously, but I say that because that's one of the few out there that I've not actually seen live that I wouldn't say it's on my bucket list because it certainly wouldn't be, but of musical acts, that's one I would like to see just so I can say I saw them. Had an opportunity when I was in school, in college, and some of my friends went, but I was a poor college student, couldn't afford it, and I've never gotten a chance to do that. So that'd be fun for me. I don't know. We'll find out.
And you know, we're assuming that it's going to be rock music. It could very well be a country artist. It could be.
I hope so. Maybe Shania Twain. She's a big country artist, right?
I don't think she is anymore.
What year is this? I couldn't tell you any. Kenny Chesney, he's a country artist, a current one.
Yeah, a Key West guy, as a matter of fact.
There you go. That's about the only one I can.
Zach Brown, who played at the ballpark last year, the year before. I think it was 2 years ago.
I'm not sure. Would that qualify? Although I hear good things about the Zach Brown Band. Would that qualify as a major concert announcement?
We went to the show. My wife is a big fan of Zach Brown's, and we went. I wasn't really thrilled with I wasn't a concert that I would have picked to go to, but I enjoyed it. And I'll tell you what, they did a cover of Whipping Post by the Allman Brothers that was outstanding. And he can play guitar for a front man.
Well, I have no reason to doubt any of that, but would that qualify as a major
no
announcement?
But your idea of major announcement and the Reds' idea of major announcement may not be the same.
Exactly. It's clearly
it may be, you know, that Chicago is going to be playing it. And I'm a huge Chicago fan, but that wouldn't be a major musical get for the Reds.
Chicago. What about Boston? What about Kansas? Come on, get out of here. It's clearly going to be Kanye. Now, that's about all when it comes to news.
Actually, there was another thing. The Reds are moving the press box.
Yeah, I guess. That doesn't matter to me because the Reds won't give me press credentials. Okay, I've not asked them in 10 years, but I bet they would.
But you will be able to buy seats in what used to be the press box, though.
Yeah, that's what they'll say. That's what they'll tell me when I ask for credentials. All right, we'll put you right exactly where the press is.
You were the Reds, would you give you credentials?
Absolutely not. No, of course I would. I think we've proven to be responsible over the years, but that's not something we've requested. So, they're moving the press box to the other side.
We talked about this on here before about the press credential stuff.
I don't think so. I don't know that we have.
We have been given press credentials for Dragons games.
I think for all the Reds minor league affiliates, we've.
I didn't know that, you know, mm-hmm. But I know we have been for the Dragons games. In fact, that's where I did I think it was one of my first interviews on here with Jay Bruce was in the dugout at mm-hmm. Dragon Stadium. And I will admit, I felt like an interloper.
Right, right.
You know, it was very odd, and maybe you get used to it, you know, and over time. But you know, I was there. You know, there was guys that they were actually working for a living, and
yeah, I requested credentials one time, and it was in 2006 when Castellini, they were having a press conference to announce that he was. Had bought the team, and there was just his introductory press conference. And I thought, oh, it'd be cool to be there for that and just, you know, be able to write about it, and was laughed out of the room. And I've never requested it since, because for the reason that you just said, really, do I need to be there day to day? If there's some specific interview I wanted that had to be done at the park, I might do that. Working on a story for Cincinnati Magazine coming up, and I may actually go through them for credentials for Reds Fest maybe. But you know, we're talking about the Reds, but we're not really in the business of breaking news or reporting the news. We're commenting on the news. We're more like columnists, I would guess, is what I would say. So, yeah. Somebody like Doug Gray, he does real reporting, especially at minor league games. That's different when it comes to online media. But anyway, and maybe Doug and I can talk about that a little more. He and I have had some conversation on that topic. Maybe on the podcast at some point we will discuss that.
But Rob Butcher would do everything he could to.
Yeah, I'm not going to make any comments about Rob Butcher because I think that the Reds Media Relations Department has a lot of great people that work there. But Rob has been a little bit behind the times, at least behind what other teams do. So whatever, that's the Reds. Again, I'm not begging them for credentials. I don't need them. Some people do need them that are trying to make their living and should be able to get them. But for me, I'm just a Yahoo out here talking about this team. Although I'd say that I spend as much time or more obsessing about this team as anybody that covers the Reds. I just may not be in the park as much.
And are more invested.
No, way more invested, but that comes from the fandom side of it.
Yep.
And we've never hidden that either. You know, we're fans. We wear our biases on our sleeves.
We're the Joe Nuxall of the Podverse universe.
I think that's probably a good way to put it, because Joe never quit being a Reds fan.
Nope. So my guess is Joe even rooted for the Reds in 61 when he was in Kansas City.
I bet it killed him, though. The one year he was gone, the Reds go to the World Series. I bet it killed him.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Okay, so free agency. Let's run through it as quickly as we can because there's not much to report. But I did want to kind of set out the calendar because people have asked, and we're going to be watching very closely to see what, if anything, the Reds do in the coming weeks. So one day after the World Series ends, and of course it ended on Wednesday night, on October the 30th, one day later, eligible players can file for free agency. And so that's begun happening, I imagine. That also, the conclusion of the World Series also started a 5-day clock. Now, this 5-day clock is kind of important. It's, first of all, what they call a quiet period, where teams can negotiate exclusively with their own free agents, but can't sign anyone. So nobody can be signed within the next 5 days. But teams can negotiate with their own players. So the Washington Nationals, you would presume, are now negotiating with Anthony Rendon. At the end of that 5-day quiet period, clubs are required to make their decisions on the qualifying offers to free agents. So some free agents, you can extend a 1-year qualifying offer. It is set this offseason at $17.8 million. So you extend a 1-year qualifying offer. For example, if Yasiel Puig had stuck around, the Reds would be in the position of trying to decide, do we offer Yasiel Puig the $17.8 1-year deal? And if they accept it, then they're yours. If they don't accept it and they're at a certain level, then you can get some compensation back when they're signed by another team. So, also, and let me know if this is clear to you, Bill, because I'm kind of running through it. I'm trying to keep it as streamlined as possible. At the end of that 5-day period, the teams have to make the decision whether or not to pick up player options for the 2020 season. And if they pick up the options, good. If they don't, those players become free agents. And then the day after that 5-day quiet period ends, it's wide open because free agents are allowed to sign with any club, and free agency technically begins at that point. So the biggest question that I think everyone asks is, and that we are continuing to ask all the time, and we've tried to answer it on this podcast already, but are the Reds going to go big? You know, we will find out within the next week. We'll start finding out within the next week. And I don't know that you and I have actually discussed this particular question. What are your expectations for the offseason?
I honestly don't know. I have dreams and hopes, you know, that they'll go big. But you know me, I've always been from Missouri. You got to show me. Until they do it, I'm gonna really struggle to believe that they're gonna ride somebody, an outside guy, you know, a 6-year, $150 million deal or $200 million deal or whatever number you want to use. I think the first interesting thing will be, and maybe this is what will, I don't know what this will tell us. It will be who they tender offers to.
Yeah, I think two things are going to happen. Number one, I think the Reds are going to push really hard, and they very well may land someone in trade, a big name. You know, I don't know who that name is. We've been dreaming about Francisco Lindor, and that's probably a dream. But I think they're going to make a push to land someone, some big name in a trade. And there's just too many people out there that would qualify for that I can't really, and I've not heard any rumors, so I can't, I'm getting the feeling of things I'm hearing is that the Reds are really going to try hard to trade for someone. But they don't have the assets.
That's what I was going to ask.
To fix the team entirely by trade. I think they have the assets to make a big deal and get somebody big in there, but they don't have enough to really fix the team entirely. They have to be active on the free agent market. Now, I'm just going to say this. Everyone is skeptical that the Reds can be competitive in terms of getting Anthony Rendon. And every time I mention it on Twitter.com, I'll get one-third of the responses will be like, oh, he's going to make too much money. No way. He's going to make too much money. To which I say, other teams have to pay lots of money for good players. Why shouldn't the Reds? And you wonder if it's coming out of those particular tweeters' pockets, the individual pockets. Now, I'm skeptical that the Reds can get that done too, because I think a lot of teams, especially after the World Series, the playoffs that Rendon just had, he's going to get whatever he wants. We have a viewer mail question later about it. The Nationals may be motivated to keep him around. I don't know, but I'll say this. If we don't get reporting that the Reds have made a serious offer for Anthony Rendon, if they don't at least kick the tires and make an attempt to sign Rendon, this is presuming he doesn't sign with the Nationals as soon as he can, you know, re-sign with the Nationals. If the Reds are not in the mix, then I'm not sure what else they can do that will convince me they are serious about going big, quote unquote, all in. Because that's the one guy that's out there on the free agent market. He's the one guy that really moves the needle, that immediately makes this a team that's you know, something to be taken seriously. You know, I expect him to really go hard after Yasmani Grandal, and I think Grandal will help the team. I think that's a big help. I think that's a big guy, but he's not the cornerstone guy. And the Reds may not be able to get that cornerstone guy. There's only one of them out there that I see, Rendon. But, you know, I'm at the point where if they're not even going to try to get a superstar in here, if you want to call Rendon a superstar, and I think I would after the last few years that he's had, including this one, if you're not willing to even try to get one of those guys, why are you wasting my time? All right. Now, that was my rant, Bill. Any comments?
No. I agree with you, but you know, like I said, I've been watching the Reds, and this front office has given us reason to believe that things are going to be done differently. But until I see them done differently in terms of spending, I struggle to believe that they'll be done dramatically differently.
And the problem there is that we're not talking about the front office and what
we're talking about ownership. And you're right. They shouldn't be globbed together.
Yeah. We're talking about is our guy Castellini going to open the checkbook enough? And that is a different question. I think if it were up to the Reds front office, they know they've got to go big and they know that they have to try to acquire some people. They may be hamstrung. And if that's the case, then okay, we'll understand that Castellini is not willing to do what it takes to deliver on his promises from back in 2006 to deliver a contender, at least not this year. It means they're willing to be patient and continue the rebuild for another 2 or 3 years. And I've lost patience. I'm not okay with that.
The moves that we've seen the front office make are all internally related, and that's all well and good. That, you know, that sets your team up for success in the future. Mm-hmm. But the things that we're talking about are generally things in the that are going to affect the minor league system, and it's not like our minor league system is loaded that it's going to that guys coming up are going to turn this team, a 15 to 20 more win team next year.
Here's what I say: I say the Reds need to trade everybody they have in the minor leagues. I've got no heartburn over trading anyone they've got, because what have they gotten out of the minor leagues the last 5 years? I mean, really, what has the minor league system produced? I know we got a different group in charge now, and hopefully in the future they're going to revitalize the minor league system. But what have the Reds gotten out of their minor league system? Nick Senzel.
Jesse Winker.
Okay. Senzel may be Winker's not a star. He's a legitimately good major league player. Senzel may end up being a star. I think he will be. Nothing else. And there's no reason to believe that anyone currently in the minor leagues has star potential, other than maybe Hunter Green. So trade them all. If you can get somebody that we know is going to help the major league team, trade them all. I saw someone use the phrase pillaging the farm system. Bring it on. Pillage it. Burn it to the ground. Mortgage the future. I hate that term. Mortgage it. I'm sick of waiting on a future that has never come in the last 30 years with, you know, very, very small windows. Burn it to the ground. Get a real major league team in Cincinnati for the first time in a long time. Have I made myself clear?
Yeah, I think you have. 'Cause, I mean, you've been beating this drum for at least 6 months.
Yeah, my patience has been exhausted. So in terms of what's available out there, I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to run through it really quickly, just a little bit of a few of the names that are mentioned. But Doug Gray at RedLegNation.com has posted a series this week that's not done, I don't think. But go read the ones that are finished where he talked about potential options. And he broke them down. First of all was the outfield. And the Reds outfield, you know, we've talked about that. You got Winker, you got Irvin, you got Senzel, you got Aquino. You know, those are four guys. I like all of them, as it were. But that's an area that needs to be upgraded. Here are some of the names that he mentioned. Hunter Pence, you know, he was American League Comeback Player of the Year. He did make an all-star team, but he's going to be 37 years old. So he's nothing more than a stopgap, but I don't know.
Well, he's not even a stopgap. He had a decent year this year, and he only played 83 games.
Yeah.
And he'd been terrible the 2 years before that.
Mm-hmm. He mentioned Corey Dickerson. Now, that's not, to me, not an option. Now, Nicholas Castellanos. That's how we'd say it around these parts.
That's how you say it down there in Virginia.
That's the way we'd say it around these parts. Don't you worry about that. Nicholas Castellanos. Now, I do like him, and I think he was kind of a guy that was under the radar a little bit in Detroit and came to Chicago and played really well. And as Doug said, it's very likely he might get him paid. But I think he could hit. And I think he's a guy that you could fit into the lineup pretty well. Any thoughts about him?
I like him, but again, he's not a guy that's really going to move the needle, I don't think. You know, his last 3 years, or at least the last 2 years, have been about the same.
Yeah. Fine.
And he's really bad defensively, as Doug pointed out in that article. I mean, he is only 28. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I just think when we talk about moving the needle, he does improve the team. And I think that other than a guy like Rendon, or maybe Garrett Cole, if you want to say him on the pitching side, you could maybe make the case that Grandal is kind of up to that level. I'm not sure that we can say that. But in terms of free agents, there aren't a whole lot of guys that are really going to move the needle that much. So we got to talk about, can they improve the roster? And I think he improves the roster.
We got to figure out, how much money do you really think they're going to spend a year? You know, the numbers I've heard are between 30 and 40 million increase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then somebody is going to have to make a decision as to whether it's better to bring in, you know, the one guy or three guys.
Well, if those three guys are Grandal, Castellanos, and Didier Gregorius, I think you improve the team enough around the diamond that – you know, you don't necessarily have to go big.
When we get to Gregorius, I want to talk about him, because I'm not convinced that the difference that he would make would be worth the money you'd spend.
Yeah, maybe not. We'll talk about him in a moment. We'll be there in a second. Marcelo Ozuna was the other interesting name. I think the Reds have already been rumored to be interested in Marcelo Ozuna. I like Ozuna. I know some people are down on him, but I don't know. I just I like Ozuna, and I think that he's due for a kind of a bounce back season. Starting next year, he'll be he's just getting ready to turn 29, so he'll be 29 next year. I think Ozuna helps this team. And then Yasiel Puig. What do you think about Yasiel Puig?
I think his time in Cincinnati has passed. I loved him here. But I think I'd go a different way if I was the Reds.
He had about a two-month period, or 6-week period there, but at the end of his Reds tenure, that was dynamite, really, really good. And but then before that, he was awful and pulled down his overall numbers. I would have expected a better season out of him overall, given it was a contract year and it really wasn't. So I don't know. But I loved every second of Yasiel Puig. If they bring him back, I'm on board with that. I'm a fan. I agree. I don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, but. If they brought him back, would you see it as a definite improvement?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you? Okay.
I think
I'm not sure I would. I'm
over Aquino?
After what I saw of him playing for the Reds, again, it's improvement versus, you know, the pie's only going to be so big. And would you be better off spending the money somewhere else? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I love Aquino. I'm just not I'm not confident in counting on him to be a guy.
Oh, I'm not either. Right.
So, but he may be that guy, and I hope he is, and makes me look silly. The other guy, I know you have a lot of thoughts on this name, Bill, because I have the same thoughts. Shogo Akiyama. Boy, he's good, huh?
I have no idea who that is.
Japanese center fielder.
Well, I would have guessed that.
And I have no idea anything about him other than he's supposed to be pretty good, and the Reds have never signed anyone from Japan. So,
I had to look him up after I read Doug's article. This Lonnie Chisenhall.
Yeah, you really haven't heard of him.
No, I mean, I know he's missed basically the last 2 years, but he's still pretty young. If you could get him for cheap for a flyer, I'd give him a shot.
If you're unable to upgrade otherwise, but again, I'm past the point of being willing to give the Reds the benefit of the doubt on taking flyers on people.
But I wouldn't spend – well, no, and even if you did, if you could get him cheap, I'd still bring him in.
Yeah, depending on what – right, yeah, depending on what he's – if he's being given an offer
to numbers
start
are very
somewhere.
Intriguing.
It'd be interesting to see if he gets an opportunity that someone's going to guarantee him a starting spot.
He's probably looking at a minor league free agent deal. Yeah. If the trend continues that it was this year.
That's true. And I would absolutely bring him in on that. So what about trying to get a center fielder in trade or I think we probably feel the same as this, in trade or a free agency and moving Senzel back to second base?
I think whatever makes the team better.
Yeah, I think it just gives you more options. I don't have any problems with it at all.
Nope, I don't either.
So – all right, the next
The other guy that Doug mentioned that and he's older, and it would depend on is Gardner.
You know, about 7 years ago, there were some rumors that the Reds were exploring trading for Brett Gardner, and I was really excited about it. He's a guy that got on base a lot. Yeah, defensively good. He's also, 60 years old now.
He's 36.
Same difference.
But he's still playing a little center field.
Center field for the Yankees. He's primary. He's a left fielder. He'd be better defensively even at his age than what the Reds will have out in left field with Winker and Irvin. I'm not entirely sure. Although you could probably make the case that he would hit better than those two. At least for next year. But man, you just signing a guy that age. I think he will.
Yep, I know. And they're going to be looking for a 3-4 year deal, I would think. And I agree. I'd struggle with a guy that age, but he's at least at 36. He's still really productive.
Wouldn't you like to have had that guy the last 7 years?
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's been.
And he came out in center field for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so Doug's next group that he looked at in terms of free agency were the middle infielders, and you wanted to talk about Didi Gregorius. That's the big middle infielder that's available in the free agent market.
Yeah, and I don't know. He had a good year in what was it? I guess it was 18.
Mm-hmm.
He had a really good year and a good year in 17, but I mean this year. He hasn't been when he played, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, but he was hurt. He was hurt all season.
And he's, turning 30, which is the same age as Galvis. They're approximately the same age. And you got Galvis for $5 million. And I have no idea what you'd have to pay Gregorius. And I'm just not sure the production is going to be enough better that it'd be worth the money that you're spending.
Well, let me pull up, since you want to compare him to Freddie Galvis. Which is ludicrous, Bill Lack. I want to pull him up here really quickly and look at his production. Freddie Galvis, who, if you upgrade elsewhere, I can live with Freddie Galvis as your shortstop. But Freddie Galvis had a 2.3 wins above replacement season in 2018. That was the best he's ever had in his career. The last 4 years for Didi Gregorius. This year was a 0.6, which was not good. The last 5 years, so which was not good. But before that, 4.2, 3.7, 2.2, 3.1. This is a solid, and that's from ages 25 to 28. He was hurt this year at age 29. This is a guy that solidly productive, good defensively, though not spectacular. But I think he's a solidly above average shortstop, and I'm willing to, given that he had four. Above average years in a row, average to above average years at ages 25 to 28, I'm willing to chalk up last year to injuries and be willing to sign him. Now, again, that becomes, how much is it going to cost? Or do the Yankees want to hang on to him? I don't know. I doubt that they do at this point. I'm a little higher on him, but I do agree with your general tone, which is that this year was not one that not the type of year you want to see out of a 29-year-old getting ready to turn 30 and signing as a free agent middle infielder. Is that a fair way to assess your argument on that?
Yep. And the big thing everybody talks about is his offense, and I'm looking at his, you know, his OPS plus and he hasn't been above average but 2 years in his career.
Yeah, but overall, he's a shortstop. How many shortstops have been above average more than that during that same amount of time?
We're in the era, aren't we? Still in the era of good offensive shortstops?
Yeah, he had an 89 OPS plus as a 25-year-old. It was still a 3.1 win player. That's a pretty good player. But you know, he was a roughly average hitter at age 26, and then above average the last 2 years before 2019. I don't know. Those are his numbers around the league. I bet as a shortstop, I bet those are top 10, top 7 or 8 offensive numbers for shortstops.
Could be right. But he's making $12 million now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the going rate for an above average shortstop. We got to stop.
But you aren't going to get him for $12 million.
You may get him for that, depending on how many years, given his season. It's all going to depend on what the market's like for him.
What would you offer him?
I don't have any idea. I don't know what the going rate is going to be. We don't know how the free agent market's going to play out. I don't know what the Reds have.
Somebody has to be the first one to make an offer.
Well, I would pay him what it takes to get him. Is the way I say on all these guys. If the Reds really want a guy, they're going to have to pay somebody. So somebody's going to pay him whatever he gets. Someone is going to pay that amount. If the Reds identify that he is their best option to improve the team, then they've got to pay whatever that amount is. I don't know. I don't think the Reds, we can limit what the Reds are going to be willing to spend, because you have to pay what the market bears. If you don't want him enough to pay that, okay, that's one thing. But you better have a plan to get somebody in here. Because I think if you go into next season with Jose Iglesias or Freddie Galvis as your shortstop, you better have improved a lot elsewhere, because those two guys are not good. So that's what I say. What, do you have a number in mind that you would offer him?
No. I'm like you. I have no idea. But I don't believe you're going to get Didi Gregorius for less than $15 million a year.
I would pay him $15 million a year. I mean, if that's what it took. $15 million right now, first of all, is not what it was even 10 years ago. You've got to pay for good players. The Reds have to at some point have to pay for good players. If they're not willing to do that, then I'm done.
Well, it's not fair to say that the Reds don't pay for good players. When Joey Votto's making big money, Brandon Phillips made good money. You know, they've paid their own players good money. They haven't brought in players.
They have paid some players. I'll agree with that, but they have not been willing to operate on the same scale as other teams. They've never been willing to play on the same playing field as other teams when it comes to paying players, even when they were paying those players. Did they get into the top 20 in payroll ever? I mean,
ever? Yeah, I'm sure they were.
You're sure? I don't know. I haven't looked at it. They probably were. Were they in the top half of teams?
In the Martin Schott era, they were.
I'm talking about the current ownership.
Are you talking the Castellini teams? No, probably not.
So, they have been willing to pay certain players, and I think the Joey Votto deal is going to end up in hindsight being a great deal. The Reds, that was good business. Paying good players can be good business. I don't know if Gregorius is that guy. I tend to think he is the best bet to improve at shortstop, because I'm not thrilled with any other options that are out there. And so I'm afraid that if it's not Gregorius, it's probably Freddie Galvis, who is he's a marginal shortstop. He's not going to kill you. He'll have a little pop, and he plays a decent defense. He's above average, but he's going to be the weak spot in the lineup. So if it takes that to get Gregorius and the Reds have identified that as a place they have to improve, well then.
I think right there is your point. The Reds, and we don't know what the Reds are looking at is in terms of where they need to, where their priorities are in terms of where they need to improve. You know?
You getting a phone call?
Yeah.
Golly, man, right in the middle of the pod. Didn't you say, tell them that you're recording a podcast?
They must not have gotten the memo.
Okay.
You know, and we don't have any idea. I would think that outfield is probably their number one priority to improve.
Yeah, probably.
Catcher,
yeah.
And then catcher, and then middle infield.
Sign Anthony Rendon to play second base, and there you go. You can put Freddie Galvis at shortstop if you want.
If that was the only move they made this winter, would you be happy going into spring training?
Yes. I mean, I think so. I don't think that necessarily gets them all the way where you really want to be 100% confident, but it shows a real commitment because we're talking a big time contract. It shows a real commitment. I think if you do that and then trade for somebody else that fills another hole, you know, without
spending. I'm saying Rendon is the only change, like, you know, other than Gaiji non-tender and bringing in Kendall, well, you know, and bringing in, you know, filler guys.
No, if that's the only deal, no. If that's the only thing they do to improve, no. Gosh, no. No. I won't be upset though, you know, because it's a big commitment. Middle infield, others, we talked about how we didn't have anything to talk about really this week, and we're somehow figuring out things to talk about. You know, Mike Moustakas was mentioned. I'm not that interested. Howie Kendrick was good in the playoffs, but no, I'm not that interested. 36-year-old Scooter Jeanette, want to bring him back?
No, thank you.
Really, Rendon, if he's willing to play second base, and if he's not, I'm moving Suarez to second base, but he's the only guy there that really moves the needle. But because it's such slim pickings, that's the reason I think that maybe Gregorius may be an option. So, catchers?
But he would be – he's also going to be the option for everybody looking for a shortstop.
Right. That's why I say Rendon's the guy for if you're looking for a third baseman or maybe a second baseman. He's the guy. He's probably the only guy. Gregorius is really probably the only guy that moves the needle anywhere for teams. Okay, if we're going to say that because other teams want them, the Reds can't get involved, let me know that because I'll check out. I'll go watch the, you know, hockey. I'll turn into a Blue Jackets fan or something because I don't have any interest in following a team that's
they don't play in the summer, Chad.
well, that's a good point. It's why I just can't get around to dealing with the Bengals because they're not serious. They're not playing the same game other teams are playing. If the Reds are going to be like that, then fine. Okay. We'll find out this winter whether they are. And if they're not, okay. Am I going to quit watching them? No, but don't ask me to believe in anything you're doing until you show me that you're serious about playing on the same playing field as other teams. So if we're just going to say that they're going to be really popular and the Reds can't get them, then why are we fooling with this? Catchers, Grindahl's the guy.
Yeah, he's the only thing that you really. But
what about the idea that I'm gonna make a proposition to you? Out of all the free agents that are currently expected to be available, Yasmani Grindahl is the most likely to be a Cincinnati Red of any of the bigger name ones.
I would tend to think that's probably true.
I tend to think they're probably going to go after him pretty hard, given that they tried really hard to get a catcher last offseason.
Gregorius might be the other one that would kind of fit into that same slot.
Yeah, Rendon is, you know, Rendon. I do.
And I think you're going to get Gregorius. You could get Gregorius cheaper than you're going to get Grindahl.
Why not both?
I didn't say you couldn't get both. I'm just saying.
No, right. I know you didn't say that, but I'm just saying we talked about what if Rendon is the only deal. What if they go out and get Grindahl and Gregorius? That improves the team pretty significantly, and I'm probably willing to at least go to bat with this group. Especially if they can make a trade to improve some. That doesn't have to be a drastic trade.
If they got Gregorius and Grandel and made a trade for a corner outfielder.
Starts to look like a pretty good team.
I would be pretty happy.
I think it would surprise everyone if the Reds were able to land both of those guys in free agency, though.
Oh, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. All right, you want to answer some viewer mail questions?
Sure.
All right, these are, as always, actual letters from actual viewers. First question comes to us from Joe Farsing at patreon.com/redlegradio. What are your top five and bottom five Reds trades in the past 20-ish years? And I made some notes. I don't know if we can do top five or bottom five, but I did make some notes on both those. Do you have like a best and a worst?
No, I'm struggling to come up with the trades. Okay. So let me just chime in on you. Let me chime in on yours.
All right, here are the five that off the top of my head I came up with. Bronson Arroyo for Willy Mo Pena.
That's tough to beat, that one.
That's a really good deal. You didn't give up anything of substance, and you got a guy that's probably going to be a Reds Hall of Famer and really, really, really good hair. Oh, mercy.
And he plays guitar.
He plays guitar. Luis Castillo for Dan Straley, who they just picked up off the waiver wire the year before. Tough to beat that one. Castillo's an all-star and looks like an ace now. What about Brandon Phillips in exchange for Jeff Stevens? That was a really good deal.
Yes, it was. Brandon, again, another future Reds Hall of Famer.
Right, in exchange for a guy who was just never anything. Let's see. What about this one? This one may cause some controversy, but I think you can make a good argument. Ken Griffey Jr.
I thought of that.
He wasn't.
The only person that we traded away. Well, Dan Wilson played for a long time out. Wasn't he part of that trade?
Was Wilson part of that trade? The only one that I remember that really made any kind of an impact was Mike Cameron, who ended up being a really good player. But
I bet I'm thinking of a different trade with Seattle. I can't remember. Who did we trade for Griffey? Do you remember?
Well, I'm going to have to pull it up here. Yeah, I do remember it. I had it up a moment ago and accidentally closed that tab. Let me pull that back up. I know Mike Cameron was involved. And let's see. Mike Cameron, Antonio Perez. Yeah, Dan Wilson wasn't in that trade. Infielder Antonio Perez, right-handed pitcher Jake Meyer, and right-handed pitcher Brett Tomko.
That's who the other one I was thinking of was Tomko, yeah.
I mean, you can make an argument that if the Reds had hung on to Cameron for the length of time they hung on to Griffey, Cameron was a good player. I mean, he was a really underrated player.
He had some really good years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, moved around a lot.
What Griffey brought, he was pretty good for a long time. He was not the Griffey Jr. that we expected, but he was pretty good, hurt a lot. But he also brought, I don't know, a little bit of star power to Cincinnati. He brought a little bit of, I don't know. I'll always fondly remember Griffey and Adam Dunn together.
I think yours is kind of the, and I'm not disagreeing with anything that you say, but I think you were a Griffey fan before Griffey came here, would be my guess.
I guess, but I didn't really have any.
You weren't invested?
No, not really. I mean, I really wanted to see him come play for Cincinnati, and it was so big because of who he was before he got to Cincinnati. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just in terms of thinking about a trade, I think it's one of the biggest trades in Reds history. I don't know if – I would agree that maybe it's difficult to classify it as one of the best of the last 20 years.
I think it's the biggest name coming to Cincinnati since Seaver had come to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the reason that at least I struggle with it is the expectations of where it was going to take the team versus what ended up happening.
Yeah, well, again, that's
and that's not all his fault. I mean,
it's not even
like blaming Adam Dunn because they didn't have any pitching.
Right.
Brett Boone was part of the Dan Wilson was part of the deal that brought Brett Boone to the Reds.
Brought Brett Boone to the Reds?
Yeah, in 93.
Okay. All right. Brett Boone had 6 years. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. The other one that we have to mention, and I saved it for last because it's my favorite. The Reds acquired Eugenio Suarez in exchange for?
Alfredo Simon.
No, wrong. The bloated corpse of Alfredo Simon.
Ah.
What a great trade that was. So
did he, whatever, you know, the rape thing or the sex thing or whatever it was with Simon, that disappeared from the headlines as quickly as it appeared.
I don't have any idea about it. I was glad he was gone. So, yep. And I'm really glad that Suarez.
When they got, speaking of someone else, they got for nothing. They picked him up off the waiver wire. Well, a day before opening day, and he had a good season for the Reds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did have one good season. So, anyway, those are the ones that off the top of my head. In terms of bad trades, I would say I still think that I'll never forgive the Reds for trading, making that Austin Kearns, Felipe Lopez deal for Majeski.
Oh, with Washington?
Royce Clayton, yeah. I mean, it was just an awful trade. I know everybody's like, well, Kearns didn't end up being anything. But that was injury related. Austin Kearns was a legit budding star, and that was injury related. Why he never, and the injury happened before he was traded. So, you know, I guess you can make the case he was damaged assets. But the Reds got nothing. They were trying to make a deal that would really push him over the top, and traded for a Majeski who had, his arm was dead, and Jim Bowden just got fleeced in that deal. Everyone agreed that at the time, the Reds got fleeced in that one. What about this one in terms of bad trades? I can't think of a ton that are really awful, but trading Josh Hamilton for Edinson Volquez and Danny Herrera. I know Hamilton was in the news. He's been charged with a felony.
Yep.
I saw that just a couple hours ago. I hadn't seen that. So maybe we shouldn't be pining for the Josh Hamilton years, but think about how great Josh Hamilton was after that trade. Volquez was fine for a while, but I think I would consider that one of the worst ones.
Yeah, was a five-time All-Star, won an MVP, was in the top 10 of the MVP another year, and
yeah.
He had some really, really good years in Texas.
The other one I think you can make the case for is the Johnny Cueto trade. Even though at the time I thought, that's a, you know, get three left-handers with solid credentials, Cody Reed, Brandon Finnegan, and John Lamb, and you get an exchange for a couple of months of Johnny Cueto. You know, I think at the time it was a good deal. I think in retrospect it looks really bad because of the name Johnny Cueto, who'd been great. And the Reds got essentially nothing out of that to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I still think Cody Reed – the clock's still running on Cody Reed. I'm not giving up on him, but, he will have to do something very significant to
– Yeah. So That's a bad one. I wonder how much of that is because of the Reds' continuing failures to develop anyone out of their minor league system, how much that hurt those guys. All right, next question from Logan Hundley at patreon.com/redlegradio. If Steven Strasburg opts out of his contract, will the Nationals focus on re-signing him or Rendon more? Welcome to Washington Nationals Radio.
I'd say Rendon.
That's a tough one. Strasburg's a homegrown guy.
Yep.
They let a homegrown guy get away. I don't know. They'll try to keep them both. Don't know. I'd like to have Rendon on the Reds, though. How about
really? Yeah, first time you've ever said that?
Well, it's just a developing thesis I'm working on. I'll have more on it later. Brian Bowdy, and here's why I like Brian Bowdy. He knows my weaknesses. He knows that I'm flawed in certain ways. And every time he asks a question at Patreon, he puts a parenthesis at the end of it, reminding me how to spell his name. Bowdy rhymes with howdy.
You mean how to pronounce his name?
That's what I said. Brian Bowdy.
You're not a judge on here, brother.
Hey, listen, I've never been wrong. We know success this offseason looks like adding 8 to 10 wins above replacement and offensive talent. What does success on the field look like in 2020? I think anything less than playing in the National League Division Series would be a disappointment. Competing for a playoff spot isn't good enough. Losing the wild card game isn't good enough. Hash brown viewer mail. What does success on the field look like in 2020?
Making the playoffs.
Yeah, I think even a wild card, I'm okay with that. Yep. We just saw a wild card win the World Series. I prefer playing the Division Series, prefer more than that. But
I would prefer to going back to having, you know, just four teams make the playoffs, you know, so.
Yeah.
But we don't get to pick, you know, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I think that I'm probably, if they just compete and fall a game or two short or something like that, I'm probably ultimately, I say it now, you know, that would not be considered a success. I'd feel at least somewhat satisfied with them just being competitive. But I think they really have to make the playoffs to justify this quote-unquote rebuild. Nathan Connor got a good question about free agency that we really just aren't going to have enough time to unpack there. But he makes a point that a lot of the Nationals guys were – only one of them was a draft pick, he says, of their of the ones he listed here. But I think that skips over Strasburg. But either way, a lot of guys were acquired in trade or free agency. And so, but his question is, this doesn't have to take long. The Reds can do this, right, essentially. And the answer is yes, they can. Are they going to be willing to do what it takes?
Yeah, like, you know, from his mouth to God's ear.
Yeah, or Bob Castellini's.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, just ask him. Nathan Connor asks, Virginia is a series of questions about rock and roll that we've been getting from Patreon. Virginia Cavalier Ryan Zimmerman or Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Robert Zimmerman? Now, first of all, Ryan Zimmerman, one of the first recruits in head coach Brian O'Connor's regime where he turned around the Virginia Cavaliers and now a world champion with the Washington Nationals. First draft pick for the Nationals. So we know him. What about Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Robert Zimmerman?
He's got another name.
He does have another name. What is that other name, Bill? I'll let you go ahead.
I don't know. He's some old guy.
Bill Lack. No, he's
No, it's not Bill Lack.
He's Bob Dylan. I love Ryan Zimmerman. He's a Wahoo and he's a champion, but yeah, give me Robert Zimmerman, a.k.a. Bob Dylan. Jeff Walter asks, do you prefer the juiced ball of the 2019 regular season or the de-juiced ball of the 2019 postseason? And do you think one benefits the Reds more than the other? You want to weigh in or you mean to just jump into this one quickly?
Go ahead. I'll let me think about it a minute.
I think that I prefer – I don't care, I guess is what I should say is, you know, I don't know that one benefits the Reds more than the other. I think that a juice ball is not my big problem with the game. It's more that it's not fun to watch all the strikeouts. And, you know, I like home runs in general. I just wish there were other things as well, more balls in play. So I don't care, and I don't know that one benefits the Reds more than the other. Juice ball certainly didn't benefit the Reds this year, and they don't have a ton of guys that are big-time power threats anyway in this day and age. I did think it was interesting how it was clearly de-juiced for the postseason, as Jeff mentions. But I don't know that was a better or worse brand of baseball because we still had all the strikeouts. So anything you have to add to that?
No, you wonder whether the size of the Reds ballpark would make it swing one way or the other, but I don't know.
Well, we had Suarez who was crazy good. But other than that, you know, I mean, they didn't really have – of course, Keno went on his crazy tear, so maybe the juice baseball helps him. But other than that, I'm not sure that the Reds have the kind of power lineup that would I don't know. That's a tough question, Jeff. Don't ask such hard ones. Thomas Dennis asks, Thomas Dennis, two first names. Always a good move. What would a successful 2020 season look like for Joey Votto and for Nick Senzel? For Joey Votto, I think a successful season would kind of look something like his 2018 numbers to me, which is a .284 on base percentage or a batting average on base percentage over .400. Power, not, you know, I don't know if the power is ever coming back for him, but I think a season like that where he's a solidly above average player is probably what we can hope for. And I don't see any reason why he can't compete again for an on base percentage championship. He's won 7 of those in his career. What do you think is a successful 2020?
Something like 2018, but more consistent.
Yeah.
You can't have those crater months.
This year a crater half. I mean, he was just awful for a long time.
I struggle with the fact that he seems to still be experimenting with his swing all the way through the season. And you would think at age 35, after 13 years, that wouldn't be happening. And I understand that he's a smart guy and knows more about hitting than 99% of the people on the planet. But I struggle, you know?
Yeah, we can't really question Joey Votto because he knows more about it than we do. You're right. But I wonder how much of his tinkering has to do with the fact that he is, a guy that is very thoughtful, and everywhere around baseball, everyone has tinkered with their swing, and a complete change in the swing dynamics around the league, and whether that's gotten into his head just a little bit, I don't know. With Senzel, I think that it's safe to say that Senzel's rookie year was, I don't think I would say it was a disappointment, but it was not quite what I expected. I think that I expect him to, I think a successful season is 2.5 to 3 wins, and I think I think he could be even better than that. I think he could have. I think he's one of the better candidates in baseball for a breakout season, presuming he's healthy, and he's very likely not going to be healthy to start the season. What's a successful season in 2020 for Nick Senzel for you?
I think 2 wins and being healthy.
He's just going to be 25.
I want to see him play 140 to 150 games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a successful season. And if he plays 140, 150 games, he's going to be productive. That's
I agree.
That's my opinion. Tyler,
before we get off Senzel, do you think that there's any reason to believe that he's going to be have less injury problems playing second base than he does center field?
I think you can make an argument that there's it's marginally safer, but I don't think. I don't think it moves the needle, as we keep using that term, but I don't think either one or the other. If he's going to get a fluke injury, it could happen anywhere. He's had him in both places.
Right. And he had a busted finger at the infield, you know. That's he could be turning a double play. He could get a Ron Oster injury, you know. I think to say, well, put him back at second base, he'll be safe there. I just don't buy that.
I think maybe given the shoulder injury – for which he had surgery, maybe he'll have to make fewer max effort throws at second base, perhaps, in terms of like long throws. But again, I don't think it's much either way. Tyler Doyle asks, "What would be your third strike call if you were a major league umpire?" Let's hear it. He says, "You ready to give me your third strike call?"
You can go first on this.
Okay, here's mine. Picture it, I'm the umpire. Okay. Joey Votto's at the plate. Here's my third strike call against Joey Votto. Ball 4. Take your base. I'm not calling any third strikes.
Your third strike call on Joey Votto would be, was that a strike, Mr. Votto?
Exactly. Please let me know when it's a strike. I'm not sure that I've got a third strike call, Tyler. I like the question, but I'm not that enthusiastic on Halloween to do that. You got one?
No, I do not.
I'll say this, though. I've had a long-standing irritation with the ridiculous third strike calls that you especially see it on like the lower levels where people just want, hey, everybody look at me. I'd say, strike 3 or just hold up my, a fist to indicate an out.
Yeah, they're trying to get to the big leagues, too.
Yeah, good for them. I'm not.
While we're talking about home plate umpires, for a second here, on Twitter, there's been a lot of complaining about the umpiring in the World Series. And do you know what the average correct call percentage is for a home plate umpire?
I have no idea.
I don't either. You know, there's I forget what the thing on Twitter is, umpire arbiter, umpire something, where he shows the worst call from a game and how far it was off and what the guy's percentage was correct for the thing. And when they're complaining about umps, I mean, they're in the mid-90s, low to mid-90s. That's pretty good for calling balls and strikes to me. Now, would I like to see a computer doing it? Probably.
I would say that I've long said, I think I've said it here on the podcast, I think that umpires get it right. I'm surprised they get it right so often. When you see that box up there, I'm surprised how often they do get it right. But man, there are some times where it's just so blatantly awful, the calls, that's when everyone screams. And I get that too, because they miss some of the easiest calls that you would think are easy for me to say. But I'm constantly amazed.
When you're not the one back there, they're throwing 100 miles an hour at.
Yeah, I'm amazed they get as many right as they do. I think robot umpires or whatever is probably a way better way to do it if they can figure that out. But I don't think umpires do that bad a job overall. One last viewer mail question. It's a movie one, so I knew you would like it. This is, again, from Joe Farzing. He wants to rank these directors. And here are the five that he lists. Stanley Kubrick, Quentin Tarantino, Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, and the Coen brothers. So I'm going to rank them. If you have any thoughts about that, let me know. Here's my rankings. And I'm doing this off the top of my head because this was a late arriving question. This is going to be controversial in some corners. I'm going to go Quentin Tarantino. Oh, man, this is tough because four of these, I think, are all-time greats. Four of these five. Tarantino, the Coen brothers, Stanley Kubrick, Francis Ford, maybe Coppola third, and Kubrick fourth. Spielberg is easily fifth out of that group in my mind. But I think Tarantino is number one. What do you think?
I completely disagree with you.
Of course. Of course.
I'm not a big Tarantino guy. And I'm really not a Coen Brothers fan.
Oh, gosh. Bill?
I'm not.
Every movie they've done has been fantastic. Literally.
No. Oh, I wouldn't agree.
Clearly. Oh, goodness. All right, so who's the best on that list then?
Coppola.
Nah, I can buy it. I mean, you know, just on the strength of The Godfather. But The Conversation's a great one. If you've not seen that one, that's a good one. I mean, he's done some great ones.
My number two would be Spielberg.
He's far and away the fifth. It's not even close. He should not even be in the same conversation with those guys.
Yeah. All he does is make movies that people want to see.
Okay, that doesn't mean they're good movies. He's done, I'll give him Indiana Jones.
You go by what you think is good and what the critics think is good, and why does that mean any more than the people that actually go out and buy tickets?
No, I think critics are often wrong, especially these days. I think that there are some movies that are good and some that are just crowd pleasers, and I think there's a difference. I think there's a real difference.
Man, do you know how snobby you sound?
Whatever. Are you telling me that whatever the latest Marvel movie is an actual good movie?
It depends on how you find good. If people want to go see it, it's a good movie.
Okay. I can give you 100 movies that are absolutely awful that people went to see. I mean, that's not a box office totals is not a way to judge good movies. It's too rough. Away because so many bad movies make a lot of money. So that's a future podcast, Bill. We're going to have to cut this one off right there. Sorry. I know you're excited to talk about movies. I did see a movie you suggested, on a previous podcast. We mentioned it very briefly. I finally got around to it the last week or so. Yesterday, not really a critically acclaimed movie, but a pretty good movie.
It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, it was, it had flaws.
I saw an interesting movie this week, The Current War.
Oh, yeah, I want to see that one. That's the Edison, Thomas Edison, right?
Yeah, Edison and Westinghouse and Tesla.
Yeah, it looks good.
It was interesting. It was good and I learned some things. I want to read more about Tesla after seeing it.
I'm hoping to get away to see the movie I've been dying to see. It's this weekend. We'll end on this note. Parasite. Can't wait to see Parasite. So anyway, any final thoughts for us, Bill?
Nope.
Go leave us ratings, reviews at iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Tell all your friends about us, please. You all know how to subscribe wherever you can find your podcast. You can support us at patreon.com/redlegradio if you want to support. Toss a couple bucks our way to help keep this thing going. Keep this pirate ship afloat, as they say. Really appreciate all of you that have been supporting us. Not just at Patreon, but all of you that download every week. It just amazes me that you do that, and I really appreciate it. For Bill Lack and Bob Dylan, this is Chad Dotson saying, so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.